They walked out of sight of Kaz and behind one of the great gnarled trees. Alice said, "I don't want him around. He's an animal, an abomination. Why, I wouldn't feel safe for a second with him around." "You asked me for protection," Burton said. "I'll give it to you as long as you're a member of this party. But you'll also have to accept my decisions, one of which is that the ape man remains with us. We need his strength and his skills, which seem to be very appropriate for this type of country. We've become primitives, therefore we can learn from a primitive. He stays." Alice looked at the others with silent appeal. Mona twitched his eyebrows. Frigate shrugged his shoulders and said, "Mrs. Hargreaves, if you can possibly do it, forget your mores, your conventions. We're not in a proper upper-class Victorian heaven, or indeed in any sort of heaven ever dreamed of. You can't think and behave as you did on Earth. For one thing, you came from a society where women covered themselves from neck to foot in heavy garments, and the sight of a woman's knee was a stirring sexual event. Yet you seem to suffer no embarrassment because you're nude. You are as poised and dignified as if you wore a nun's habit." Alice said, "I don't like it, but why should I be embarrassed? We're all are nude, none are nude. It's the thing to do, in fact, the only thing that can be done. If some angel were to give me a complete outfit, I wouldn't wear it. I'd be out of style. And my figure is good. If it weren't, I might be suffering more." The two men laughed, and Frigate said, "You're fabulous, Alice. Absolutely. I may call you Alice? Mrs. Hargreaves seems so formal when you're nude." She didn't reply, but walked away and disappeared behind a large tree. Burton said, "Something will have to be done about sanitation in the near future, which means that somebody will have to decide the health policies and have the power to make regulations and enforce them. How does one form legislative, judicial, and executive bodies from the present state of anarchy?" "To get to more immediate problems," Frigate said, "what do we do about the dead man?" He was only a little less pale than a moment ago, when Kaz had made his incisions with his chert knife. Burton said, "I'm sure that human skin, properly tanned, or human gut, properly treated, will be far superior to grass for making ropes or bindings. I intend to cut off some strips. Do you want to help me?" Only the wind rustling the leaves and the tops of the grass broke the silence. The sun beat down and brought out sweat, which dried rapidly in the wind. No bird cried, no insect buzzed. And then the shrill voice of the little girl shattered the quiet. Alice's voice answered her, and the little girl ran to her behind the tree. "I'll try," the American said, "but I don't know. I've gone through more than enough for one day." "You do as you please, then," Burton said. "But anybody who helps me gets first call on the use of the skin. You may wish you could have some in order to bind an axe head to a haft." Frigate gulped audibly and then said, "I'll come." Kaz was still squatting in the grass by the body, holding the bloody liver with one hand and the bloody stone knife with the other. Seeing Burton, he grinned with stained lips and cut off a piece of liver. Burton shook his head. The others, Galeazzi, Brontic, Maria Tucci, Filippo Rocco, Rosa Nalini, Caterina Caponi, Fiorenza Fiori, Babic, and Giunta had retreated from the grisly scene. They were on the other side of a thick-trunked pine and talking subduedly in Italian. Burton squatted down by the body and applied the point of the knife, beginning just above the right knee and continuing to the collarbone. Frigate stood by him and stared. He became even more pale and his trembling increased, but he stood firm until two long strips had been lifted from the body. "Care to try your hand at it?" Burton said. He rolled the body over on its side so that other, even longer strips could be taken. Frigate took the bloody-tipped knife and set to work, his teeth gritted. "Not so deep," Burton said, and a moment later, "Now you're not cutting deeply enough. Here, give me the knife. Watch." I had a neighbor who used to hang up his rabbits behind his garage and cut their throats right after breaking their necks, Frigate said. I watched once. That was enough. "You can't afford to be fastidious or weak-stomached," Burton said. "You're living in the most primitive of conditions. You have to be a primitive to survive, like it or not. Brontich, the tall, skinny Slovene who had once been an innkeeper, ran up to them. He said, "We just found another of those big mushroom-shaped stones, about 40 yards from here. It was hidden behind some trees, down in a hollow." Burton's first delight in hectoring Frigget had passed. He was beginning to feel sorry for the fellow. He said, "Look, Peter, why don't you go investigate the stone? If there is one here, we can save ourselves a trip back to the river."